Defense Department CIO Terry Halverson says he wasn't surprised at all the attention last week when he announced that he wanted to phase out the Common Access Card, the CAC, for computer network access, and he wants to do it within 2 years. Now, Halverson says there's a good reason behind the need to move this 15-year-old secure identity card off the main plate here. Federal News Radio's executive editor Jason Miller writes the second-day story about Halverson's rationale in this week's Reporter's Notebook and joins me now with more. And Jason, he's really got the right idea, he thinks, but can he do it in 2 years? I mean, give us the background.
So about a week ago, give or take, Terry Halverson spoke at an event hosted by Brocade. And you know, a lot of times, Tom, these events, there's not a lot of news comes from it. But this one, he dropped the bomb right away.
And everybody sat up and listened to that one.
The ears perked up very quickly. He said, in 2 years, I want to phase out the Common Access Card for logical network access. So when you log onto your computer every day, you put your CAC in there and say, okay, I'm now authenticated to the network, I can get on. This has been the way DoD's been doing it since at least 2006. Really, they've had the CAC in place since 2001, but this has been part of DoD's culture, it's part of their mentality in terms of security, and it's made a huge difference. I mean, this is a major cybersecurity breakthrough, and it, you know, just to go on an aside here for a second, it always amazed me that the rest of the civilian government took so long to follow suit under HSPD-12 and that Secure ID initiative, very similar to the CAC initiative.
And that's not a universal thing by any means for cyber access, for online access.
For civilians, no. Right. It only took until the cyber sprint last year to get them there. So that's why it was such a big news. And the reaction time we got online was incredible. That story that I wrote got huge amount of attention, comments, shares on LinkedIn, visitors to our website. I mean, it was probably the biggest story, one of the biggest stories we've had this year. So when Terry Halverson spoke just the other day at the FCA Northern Virginia lunch, obviously I had to be there and I had to ask him about the Common Access Card and his plan. And what I got back from him was very interesting. He said he was not surprised by the reaction, as you mentioned. He goes, I want people to think. I want people to think about it, and that's what I want them to do. One DoD source told me he was firing for effect, and I thought that was a perfect analogy to say he was just putting it out there and seeing where it dropped and see what the reaction was.
And so what was his rationale? I mean, the card works. It does what it's supposed to do. And so what's the rationale for getting rid of what most people think is something perfectly good?
I think there's two things going on here. First, the easy one is mobility. Using the Common Access Card with a smartphone, with a tablet computer, is not easy. It's inelegant, as Rob Carey from Vencore told me, former Defense Department Deputy CIO. They have not found a good way yet. They have some pilots. They have some ideas of how to do it with derived credentials. But basically, it's inelegant, and mobility is such a big thing through not just DoD, but through every part of the warfighter's day. They go in the battlefield. They have a laptop. They're using it, you know, to call in support. Putting a CAC card in while you're, as Terry Halverson, some shells are falling around you is not a very good thing.
Yes, and I've seen some of the kludgy things they've put together to try to make them work with mobile devices. They used to glue sleds onto the back of Blackberries and make a really clunky thing, which is against the whole idea of mobility.
Right, because you need batteries. It's heavier now. There's a whole thing. I think the other reason is there are better technologies under development that can replace the Common Access Card.
And work with mobile devices.
And work with mobile devices, correct. I think that's key. Now, Terry Halverson made it clear we're still going to need the CAC for physical access control, meaning to get into your buildings. We're still going to need an identity card for DoD personnel and civilians and contractors. So he said, but just for network access, for computer access only, there are more elegant solutions, and there are more solutions that are maybe even better, multi-factor. He talked about behavior. He talked about maybe even biometrics. I mean, Tom, think about Apple and Google. You can pay with your thumbprint or your fingerprint. My iPhone, I can log on just using my thumbprint now. So he's looking at that going, what are things we can do that, again, are more secure or just as secure, easier to use, more flexible, more agile, and can really work well with the mobile devices?
We're speaking with Federal News Radio's Jason Miller, and you got some reaction to this whole gambit from around industry and government.
Absolutely. We got huge reaction both online, and we got huge reaction in person. Whenever I went out somewhere over the last week, people would say, what about Halverson and that CAC comment? I talked to Rob Carey, as I mentioned, from Vencore. He was a former DoD Deputy CIO, Navy CIO, and he pointed right to the challenges DoD is having with the mobility. So he said that's what's really driving this. I also talked to a current DoD executive who did not want their name to be used, and basically they said it's a good thing to get people thinking about it, but this is not a lot of reality right now because of how marbled the CAC is inside DOD. You sign documents, you send encrypted emails. Everything that DOD does really revolves around the CAC. The second thing this person said was there's also no to change in DOD, you need two things. You need money, you need a program. And the CAC update, the next generation, whatever you want to call it, has neither right now. And this person said they also have not seen anything in the POM, the DOD planning budget right. document that for 2018 and beyond. So those things say to this person, I think this is just a little spaghetti against the wall and see how people react. And then let's add the third reason.
But that sounds like the kind of institutional bureaucratic reaction you always get to these things.
I think to a certain extent, but it's also reality. I mean, DOD works in a specific way.
True.
And if there's this idea we're going to change this in 2 years, but there's been no planning for it, no money for it, that's leads people to scratch their heads. And Tom, remember, the other thing to keep in mind is Terry Halverson is a quote-unquote political appointee. So he's only going to be here for another 6 to 7 months.
True.
So how much can he get done in that time?
All right. Well, I guess that's kind of a wait and see thing. But maybe the idea, like you say, if he fired for effect, maybe it will catch on and somebody will decide, let's obsolete ourselves before we become obsolete.
And I think that's what Terry Halverson is doing. He's saying, let's get people thinking, let's get industry reacting, let's get big thoughts happening.
All right. Also, you're writing about a Supreme Court ruling. And as we've spoken about before, you don't often get procurement.
Right.
Federal contracting procurement decisions in the Supreme Court. But this one does have some ramifications that happened just recently.
There were actually two rulings last week that are really important. And then there was a third issue that came up, Tom, an interim rule from the Railroad Retirement Board. So let me start with the Supreme Court rulings. The first one was a Veterans Affairs Department issue called the Rule of Two. And I won't get into all the details. We have a link to the Supreme Court decision online. We have more information there as well. But long story short is, Kingdomware, a company, challenged VA's decision not to use what they call the rule of two for a procurement that right. They were questioning whether they should set aside that procurement for a service-disabled veteran-owned business if they had two or more who were qualified. VA said, we don't have to do it because we met our goals, so therefore we don't have to use the rule of two anymore. The Supreme Court ruled opposite, no, you have to use it all the time.
Right.
So that's very important. The second one was a False Claims Act ruling from the Supreme Court. And this was in the healthcare world, but it applies more broadly. And basically it says that if a vendor submits a payment, a form to the government for payment for services, there's an implied certification here. And they're basically saying, we have met all the requirements of the contract by submitting this invoice. Again, we have both cases linked up on federalnewsradio.com. Very interesting reading. Big changes to the federal acquisition community. Tom, there's one more, though, that was probably even bigger that no one, I don't think, is paying close attention to. And this goes back to the Railroad Retirement Board, one that you don't really think about as a False Claims Act, a procurement world. But the RRB put out an interim rule back in early May that would increase the penalties under the False Claims Act to $10,000 to $21,000. That's double what they are now, $5,000 to $11,000. And what the lawyers I've talked to say, Bill Wellmouth from Steptoe Johnson, he basically said, this is just the beginning. If the Railroad Retirement Board can do it, other agencies will follow. And this is a major change because right now he says the penalties are stiff, but these are going to even be more stiff because of the doubling of the penalties per count. So if vendor X has 10 counts, that's $10,000 per count, that's $100,000 at the very least, or $200,000 at the most. So that's the way that would work.
All right, so getting rough out there. Federal News Radio's executive editor, Jason Miller, thanks for that update.
Always a pleasure, Tom.
Be sure to read his notebook at federalnewsradio.com. It's online right now. Share this interview with colleagues at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click Share with Friends.